Bill Persky knows comedy as well as anyone. He has won 5 Emmy Awards, written and produced some of television's most popular shows, including The Dick Van Dyke Show, That Girl, and Kate and Allie. Now, in a memoir called My Life is a Situation Comedy, he details how his real life mirrored the sitcoms he wrote and vice versa, and shares his experiences working with stars like Goldie Hawn, Mary Tyler Moore, and Steve Allen. It's published by Mandeville Press, and I'm very pleased that it brings Bill Persky to our show today.
I'm so happy to be here. As I said when I came in, it was nice to have a handshake from the voice I've heard so often.
Well, my voice does come out of my hand. So
yes,
it works
it's true.
Well.
I didn't realize that until now.
When you graduated from Syracuse in 1953, did you know that you wanted to work in television?
No. I really had no idea what I was. The only thing I knew was I didn't want to go in my father's business, which was not a bad business. He was not a gangster or anything. He owned an auction gallery on the boardwalk in Atlantic City. And I think my sense of performing came from there. I used to work in the store and was a pitch man and stuff like that. But I knew I didn't want to do that. And
you were engaged at the time to
a young lady
whose father
was in the garment industry.
And he wanted you to go into that.
Yes. I was the son he never had and did not end up with. And I said, I have grander plans. I had no idea what they were at the time. But I got a job at a small ad agency in New York as a trainee, which was, I got $30 a week.
To write infomercials?
I produced infomercials for the Rotobroil 400, which was the original of the broilers, that small apartments, they bring in the broiler, and the Rotobroil 400 roast, toast, broils, bakes, and fries at the same time, whether you want it to or not. I mean, it had one heating element. If you were on top of it, it boiled. If you were on the bottom of it, it grilled.
I used to be in that business. I worked for Suffolk Marketing
for
a number of years. That ended your engagement?
Well, the announcement that I didn't want to be in the family business and other things at the time.
Did you ever see your ex-fiance again after you started working in television?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, when I was working on a Sunday at WPIX back in 1955, I was producing commercial there on the Roto Magician, a 15-minute cooking show, and I felt that the world was mine. I was in the business, and I was walking home, and I stopped to pick up a bottle of milk in a container, which was leaking, and I didn't know it. And as I was walking down the street, I felt I knew everybody, and I was overjoyed. And then I realized as I went past the hotel, which hotel was it on? 57th. At any rate, there were a whole group of people all dressed up, and I thought, I know all these people. And I did. It was the end of the wedding of the girl who I had been going with. And I suddenly was in the middle of this crowd of people. My pants were soaking wet in an embarrassing place from the milk, which I didn't realize. And she and her husband came out. And I guess everyone thought I had a bomb or something. But
I hadn't been invited.
No, invited. I didn't even know it was happening. And I just stood there. And the people were throwing rice. And it was swelling on my pants from the milk, and I walked them to the car and said, "Ted, great girl." I mean, it was. I guess that's why my book is called "My Life is a Situation Comedy," because things just happen to me that don't seem normal.
Well, what took you from producing infomercials and commercials to writing comedies?
I left that and got a job at WNEW Radio. For $35 a week. I was in the continuity department, and I had no idea what that was. And then a week later, the guy who ran the continuity department left, and I became head of the continuity department, which I still didn't know what it was.
How old were you at the time?
I was 25. And I had to hire somebody. So I ended up hiring Sam Denoff, who became my writing partner for 20 years. And Sam was an incredible guy and funny. He had been the bargain broadcaster at Klein's department store, where his final announcement was, "Ladies, there is a sale on Maidenform bras. on the sixth floor. This is a bust-out saving. And they fired him. And fortunately, he ended up with me. And we just both started laughing and kidding around a lot. And then we started to write little jokes on the pages of the continuity book, which was what radio stations have. It's the next thing that's going to happen to keep the show moving in continuity. So we would write little jokes to the disc jockeys, and they started reading them. And then the station manager said, keep doing them. And so that's how we started writing comedy.
But then you left.
Left AEW, there.
And you got a job working for the Steve Allen Show?
Yes.
So that, you had to move to L.A. for that?
Yes. We got a three-week... Well, we had done a lot of writing for nightclubs. There was a young agent. We did a Christmas show at WNEW when we were first there, and this young guy was there, and he said, geez, that was great. I'm with the William Morris office. I'd like to sign you. And that was amazing. Someone wanted to sign us. And he said, I don't have my cards yet because until yesterday I was in the mailroom. And that was a young man by the name of George Shapiro who went on to discover some of the great talent. I mean, Andy Kaufman, he's Jerry Seinfeld's manager. They've been together forever. And George was the most adorable killer in the world. And he just got us all these jobs and eventually to television.
Were you ever tempted to perform?
Yes. During college, I used to do impressions, and everybody did back in the 50s. It was easy. James Cagney, Humphrey Bogart. I don't know how you do impressions of people today because everybody screams, you know. And I remember I was interviewed by the school paper at my older daughter's school, and they said, were you ever a performer? And I said, yes, I used to do impressions of actors, most of whom are now dead. And when the paper came out, it said Dana's father used to be in show business. He did impressions of dead actors. But I really...
We've all had that experience with the press. So what was the most... So you started writing for Steve Allen.
Right.
And you wrote a joke.
Yes.
It's not the funniest joke ever written, but it was really important
it was
to your career.
It was I would not be here now. God knows where I would be. But we went out to California, Sam and I, on a three-week guarantee. And if we were held on after 3 weeks, we would be picked up for another 3 weeks and then another 3 weeks. So it was a shot at getting into television that we had to take. We weren't allowed to take a 3 week hiatus from our jobs. I was earning $70 a week at that time, and this was for $500 a week a person for each of us. And at the end of the third week, we had no idea what was going to happen, but we were doing that. Ben Casey was on television then, and Steve did a sketch about Ben Casey. And the opening, I don't know if you remember it, but the opening of Ben Casey, there was this blackboard, and this old Viennese doctor would point to these
chalk. Played by Sam Jaffe.
Yes, Sam Jaffe, Gunga Din. And there were these chalkborn things, and he would point to them and say, this is the sign for man. This is the sign for woman. This is birth. This is death. And this is infinity. So when we did the thing, we had the blackboard. And he said, this is the sign for man. This is birth. This is death. And this is infinity. And then he said, and this is a pussycat. And we had a little Well, Steve laughed. Which Steve did. Steve cackled. I don't know if you ever interviewed
Steve.
Yeah,
I did. He
one
was
of
wonderful.
The truly amazing people of the world. And he appreciated stuff, especially puns and really silly stuff. So he said at that moment, pick these guys up for 26 shows. And it was canceled after 5 weeks, and I had to be paid for the whole time.
And then you moved on to the Dick Van Dyke Show? That's a big jump.
Yes, yes. That was amazing because, first of all, it brought us to Carl Reiner, who I don't know if you've interviewed Carl.
Yes, wonderful man.
Carl Reiner is a gift in anyone's life, I must say. And the Van Dyke Show was so highly regarded. We came in the third season. It was already a hit, and everybody wanted to be on it. And we came in, and you became royalty because you wrote the Van Dyke Show.
Bill Persky is my guest. He's in a memoir called My Life is a Situation Comedy. There was a lot of controversy about an episode you wrote called That's My Boy.
Yes, it was the first first show that we did, actually.
And you started off causing trouble.
God, yes. It was in 1963, and we had this idea. And again, it was because of something that was personal, as all the stuff on the Van Dyke Show was. That's what makes great comedy, when it is personal. And we had just had our first child, and we got some flowers that were not for us, and then we got a package of nuts that was not for us. And I said, how do we know we're going to get the right kid? This hospital doesn't know what it's doing. And, of course, there was no DNA back then, so you really couldn't. So that was the premise of the first show we did, that Dick thought that they had the wrong child.
So I guess the controversy that the network didn't want you to run it because the wrong child, when they finally find the other child, turns out to be an African-American
yes,
kid.
And that was the only way we could end the show, was to have a different ethnicity. Mm-hmm. And they fought. It was 1963, and race relations were very volatile. And Carl just fought and fought and fought, and they let us do it.
So then you started working on That Girl, which is a kind of a perfect follow-up to That's My Boy. But you got involved with a number of films, a number of shows, which featured women in strong roles.
I've always, yes. Women have been a very strong influence in my life. Obviously, mother, my sister, who actually That Girl was named after, because that's how my parents always referred to my sister, because she was and is at 87 one of the most amazing people in the world. And they used to say, that girl's driving me crazy. Guess what that girl did today? It was just a way of talking about her in the third person. And Marlo, and I'm sure you know Marlo, is that girl.
Well, you call her the velvet steamroller.
Yes, because she is, when she believes in something, she will not let up, and she will roll over you but not hurt you.
You also encountered Goldie Hawn fairly early
yes.
in her career. At that time, did people just think she was the ditz that she played on Laugh-In?
She wasn't on Laugh-In yet.
This is
she
before
had
Laugh-In.
Been a go-go dancer, and we had written a pilot of a show based on our time at WNEW called Good Morning World, which was what William B. Williams used to say starting mm-hmm. his show. And we were looking, as everyone was, because it was right after the Van Dyke Show, we were looking for the next Mary Tyler Moore, which there never was and never will be, because there's only one of those also. And this young girl came in for the part of the wife. She was like the 15th person we'd seen that day. And she was all wrong, because wives back then were very solid, attractive, but they didn't look kooky. And this girl was just delightfully, elegantly kooky. And she came in and read, and she was all wrong. But the thing that sold us was, in the scene, the girl had to pour tea. And she brought in a little teapot with her. And there was no way to not fall in love with her. So I said to Sam, come here a minute. And we talked. I said, we can't let this girl go. And he said, no. So we came back and said, you're not going to be the wife, but you're going to be her best friend. And she said, well, I read the script and there was no best friend. I said, not until you came into the room. And that was Goldie's friend. And that's where George Slaughter found Goldie, actually.
Well, there have been other shows, and there were, for a while, you also got involved in specials. I imagine specials
yes.
are a lot more fun to work on because you don't have to keep them going
yes,
week after
exactly.
week after week.
And you get to be brilliant on a very limited basis. And they don't do them anymore, and it's really a shame. But, you know, they were Judy Garland special. I mean, they're classics, and all the ones that Dick did were just terrific.
Well, there's a lot of talk about how Seinfeld drew upon people's real life experiences.
Yes.
But you suggest in this book that sitcoms have always been doing that, or at least the ones you were involved
in. Yes. The best ones were. And, you know, it's so interesting. Obviously, with the book out, I've been doing a lot of interviews, and I find myself rethinking what my original approach to all this was. I mean, you know, we talk about the golden age of television. Well, you can't separate what's happening in television from what's happening in the world. And you know, if you look back at things like the Dick Van Dyke Show and looked at the secret life of Rob Petrie, I mean, you didn't do that then. You just dealt with everyday situations, but you never went into, like, characters. Did they watch porn? Were they abusive? You know, it was all, you didn't go into those things then. And now everything is available, you know? And I'm not thrilled with it.
You don't like the current sitcoms?
No. I love Modern Family. There is a dignity to those people. And I think that's the most important thing in my mind is the dignity of the people and of human beings and their aspirations. And I just wrote a piece about Girls. And I think Lena Dunham is just brilliant and everything. But it upsets me. Especially because of, and as a matter of fact, Parade magazine on Sunday referred to her as that girl, and I said she's a lot of things, but she's not that girl. That girl elevated the expectations of an entire generation of young women, and this now it kind of just wallows in. I mean, I have wonderful daughters; they're not without their issues, but they're always aspiring to be beyond them.
Well, I guess that means that you don't think Homeland was all that funny
either. No, Homeland, though, is brilliant. Man, I wouldn't miss it.
Bill Persky's My Life is a Situation Comedy, starring all sorts of people we didn't get to, including Orson Welles.
Oh, God, that was great.
The book is published by Mandeville Press. Thank you so much for being here.
It's on Amazon, and I'm thrilled to have been here. I can't believe it's over. Thank you.